say my name until the city burns and the stars fade away and your scars don't hurt. I will hold you till the sun comes crashing down. I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Restored to More podcast, a listener-supported podcast that is dedicated to restoring marriages to wholeness in Christ after being affected by pornography and sexual brokenness.
After betraying Charity with pornography and unwanted sexual behavior, we had no idea how to rebuild our relationship or even if it was possible to restore what was broken.
Today, by God's grace, we have learned how to connect again, laugh again, and rebuild spiritual, emotional, and sexual intimacy to an even greater experience than before.
Our goal is that as you hear our story, the stories of others, and the knowledge needed to heal, you too can have a marriage that is becoming restored to more.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Update everyone. Course 1 registrations are back open. Whoop whoop. This is an 8-week course starting Thursday, September 14th that is designed to help you and your spouse start the journey to becoming restored to more. It will be led by R2M certified coaches, Cody and Michelle Larson. We will be focusing on how to cultivate safety and trust, healthy communication, deal with triggers, and begin to discover how God can use crisis to create closeness. You can see all the details on our website and can register today at www.restoredtomore.com/courses. Also, if you have appreciated this podcast, a great way to say thank you is leaving a 5-star rating and a positive review. These reviews help more people find the podcast and experience hope and healing.
Say my name until the city.
Dr. Mark Laser and Debbie Laser founded Faithful and True Ministries, providing counseling services for individuals and couples. They have intensive workshops for men, their spouses, and couples who are widely considered life-changing by those who attend. Mark and Debbie Laser have written over 15 books on the subject of sexual addiction, including Healing Wounds of Sexual Addiction and Shattered Vows. Her recent research project, Post-Traumatic Growth in Relationally Betrayed Women, was published in the Journal of Marital and Family Therapy. Faithful and True is widely considered one of the leading Christian sexual addiction treatment centers in the country. Welcome, Debbie Laser.
Number four, you talk about learning how to be safe people in sexuality. And this is actually a biblical principle, right? The Bible says don't deprive one another unless you've set aside a time to where you're going to abstain from sex for other reasons. And I think that would definitely play into this scenario. Is that right?
Well, yes, but I believe it's more than that, you know, Clinton, that creating safety is about emotional safety or verbal safety, physical safety, sexual safety, financial safety, and spiritual safety. Meaning that if any of those things are, we're starting to control another person in how we're talking or we're using a lot of verbally abusive language in terms of threats or pressure, or if we're hurting another person physically when they don't, you know, do something we want them to do, or they're not speaking the way we want them to speak. What we know about safety is that the less safe we feel, the farther away we're going to want to move from someone. So again, we're doing the exact opposite of what we're trying to do, which is to build intimacy and closeness. You know, you'll know for yourself, too. I only get close to people who I feel safe with.
Yeah.
If somebody's hitting you, you'll definitely move farther away. Someone's calling you names and threatening and blaming you all the time. Chances are you'll shut down and you'll stop telling them things.
Yeah.
I have a lot of women who are not financially safe. You know, their husbands have been using their information, which maybe only they have at this point in their relationship, and threatening if she were to leave or if she doesn't act in a certain way or be sexual with him, then he's going to pull the plug on financial support for her. You know, so
yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Is absolutely essential to build intimacy. And we like to work on very specific things about safety. So sexuality is definitely one of those. We need to know whether we're insisting on someone being sexual with us. And if so, is that creating unsafety for that person? If for whatever reason they're not feeling connected to you, and we're going to talk about this in one of the later points here, or if it's your expectation that they have to treat you this way or perform this way for you, our belief is that's not safe for the relationship.
Absolutely. And I think that is so crucial. Like you said, there's a lot more to it than just the sexual part of it. There's so many components of being safe. And Charity and I, it was hard to discover that because, again, I don't think most guys understand that, right? Again, we're going on our own journey of becoming sober-minded and just, you know, realizing how to healthily process. I don't even want to use that word cope anymore because, right, coping mechanisms are more negative. But how to healthily process things. And we don't always understand that a woman needs to feel safe in order for there to be growth. And at the same time, guys also need to feel safe in order to take the plunge into the pool of trying to be intimate, because that's very hard for us to do. You know, I think super hard for us to share our feelings. I mean, it's actually still hard for me. There are many times where Charity is like, come on, share what you're feeling. And I'm like, I can't help but this mindset I've had my whole life of feeling weak when I'm sharing that I'm sad or I'm angry, or you know what I mean? But it's not weak. Actually, it takes more strength to share intimate emotions than it does to hide them and medicate them, for sure.
Yeah.
So you talk about number five, owning your triggers. Why don't we hit on that for a little bit?
Okay. Owning is a huge part of couples doing well together. And by that owning, I mean that when we have an emotional reaction to something in our life, there are always thoughts that are in line with our feelings. We have thoughts that also go along with our emotions, and we have needs and we have desires of the heart. But oftentimes when we have an emotional reaction, our response is that we wish somebody else would notice it and also initiate something on our behalf. Because the truth is, what we often believe is, if you really loved me, you would know what I'm feeling and you would know how to step in and take care of me. That's a distorted core belief, as we say, that many couples need to work on changing in their relationship, because it's not a truth. We can't read each other's minds, so to speak.
You should see the faces Charity's making. Her eyebrows are going up. You know, she's looking at me like, you better be listening to this part. You better be taking notes right now. You know, this is still something I struggle with. I just think that, I just believe God should have given Charity the ability to read minds. You know, it is so not true. I love that you're saying it is a distorted belief. And I am, you're saying this and I'm going, Oh man. You know?
So what does it mean to own this? You know, Clinton, it's fairly simple. It mainly means I'm going to talk about it. You know what? So what that sounds like is, when I woke up today, I was really sad because I heard you were going to be away for another business trip, and you know, my belief is you just don't spend enough time at home, and my need is that you really are home more with me and the kids. So that would be owning my sadness. Now if I weren't doing this, I could get up and I could just look sad, and I could pout, and I could not talk, and I could mope around and hope that maybe Mark at the time would have noticed that something was wrong, and eventually he would come to me and say, gosh, honey, you don't look like yourself today. What's going on? And then I put all the responsibility on him to talk about what's going on for me. If you're going to do well as an individual, this is an individual thing as well as a couple thing. We have to get good at owning our own emotional responses to stuff.
I couldn't agree more. And I think what Charity has gotten better at, and I will say this, that, you know, it is really hard to share emotions when somebody isn't always the best listener, right? Because, you know, and it's so funny. Charity and I always talk about this, how in most things we go to, it almost feels like I relate more to the female side and Charity to the male side, because she's just a fixer. She just wants to fix it. And so she's had to work really hard at first off, I have to work hard at voicing my emotions. And then she has to work hard at going, and now I just wanted to fix it real quick and go, okay, well then you should do this. And you know, it's hard sometimes to share emotions when the other person really doesn't want to listen. They just want to fix it and move on. And I got to give Charity some kudos here, because what she's done is she has gotten much better at listening and being a better listener and asking questions when I'm sharing and saying, hey, well, you know, what made you feel that way? And okay, well, I get that. And so, you know, give me more and what else and things like that. And so, and I got to, because we're getting better at this, because I think for a long time, and this might relate to more so the women than the men, but at the same time, it's hard to share your emotions with somebody who you think is just trying to fix you versus listening to understand.
Yeah. And that, again, becomes part of how you're safe. You know, back to number four again.
Yeah.
What do we do when we're safe? Well, we don't fix people and we don't tell them what to do and we don't have judgments about them. And we slow things down so that we can really hear what they're saying. You know, all those are elements of how to be a verbally safe person with another one. So you're right. You're working on this too. And I think it kind of leads into the next one, the next point, number six, which is to heal personal childhood trauma or just experiences. Because everything we've experienced earlier on in life creates patterns for us for how we will do it as an adult. Until such time as we make a decision to work on doing it differently. So, for instance, you know, Clinton, you talk about having, when you have emotions of sadness or so forth, you have learned through childhood experiences that if you're going to be a man, you don't show those. That's something you learned.
Yep.
And what's true, as an adult now, you can explore that belief system of yours and decide whether that's one you want to live with today or not. Mm. You know, that's something that was put on you. You could call it abuse if you want, because in some ways we all need to be able to feel all of our emotions. That's what we believe, biblically, I believe, and also clinically, it's a good thing for us. But you learn something different. And now as an adult, you get a chance to decide whether you want to put a new belief in place for yourself. Update your belief system is what I call it. Mm. And when you do that, and when you look back at your life experiences, there are all kinds of these belief systems that are playing out in terms of why you do what you do and believe what you believe as an adult today. It's an amazing journey of self-reflection. Mm.
I love that. It makes me think of like our techie world, right? How many times do we have to update an app? You're hitting update apps all the time. You know, it's like we got to update self, update belief system. Here we go. Putting in a new internal core processor so I can function better and just can be more intimate in my relationships. That is so good.
I think when a couple also can properly express to one another their own personal childhood trauma, that'll give a lot more understanding to why they do, why they think, why they believe certain things.
Yes, yeah. And you know, I think, Charity, that it might be helpful even if we took the word trauma out, because some of it's traumatic, but a lot of it is just experiences.
Yes.
You know, I had experiences in my home, for instance, when things got hard, that our belief system we shared was in time, it would just get better. Mm. So, you know, I didn't have experiences that taught me, well, let's see if we can learn something from that, or, you know, all those other things that could have been a possibility, or God's at work in your life, or any of that. No, my main experience was, give it some time, we all have our things, and it'll get better. Mm. So today, I mean, that wasn't really traumatic. It just was.
Yeah.
And it was one of the belief systems, you know, my parents brought, no doubt from their parents and probably from theirs, the generation before. And this is what I think we talk about biblically, about our generational patterns that get passed down from generation to generation. They're about all kinds of things. So maybe if we get good, like you say, at not only knowing what our belief systems were and what our patterns were that we learned, but now we can share them with our spouse. One of the things that it does is it helps them to know, well, I'm not the only reason why she does this. You know, someone else helped her to believe that too. Mm. And so it really, you know, it really opens us up with much greater safety to be able to share all kinds of stories about why we do what we do.
Mm. I love that. And I think that goes into your next point, right? Of being companions.
Yes.
And being allies.
Yes, exactly. There's so much in that goes into being companions. I think one of them you mentioned earlier, Charity, is how can we determine some of the things we're both working on really in the same way in our journeys? You know, I think about things like accountability. You know, I talk with women all the time about when they've decided to change some things in their life. Oh, like, for instance, going on a diet because I want to be a better weight for myself. It's so much better to have accountability or encouragement, might be another word to use in that same light. Encouragement from other people that know I'm trying to do this particular thing so that I can have help and I don't try to just do it on my own. Mm. Well, that's the exact same thing a man's trying to do when he's working on fidelity issues. Mm. He's putting in place accountability or encouragement from other men so that they can help him on the path that he wants to walk down. We can learn about coping because we all have coping mechanisms, behaviors or substances they're not the same. And we all still have ways that we're trying to comfort ourselves when life gets hard. We can become allies when we can start talking about those different things and accepting that even though we've chosen different things, it still created some of the distance I talked about earlier, or the something missing in our relationship, because we're off on our individual islands taking care of ourselves instead of learning how to help each other in that place. There are many, many things. You know, what have I learned from this situation? What have you learned in that situation? What do I do when I'm in pain? What do you do when you're in pain? There are so many parts of our journey that are so similar. And when we can start recognizing that, we can start becoming allies for each other, wanting the best for each one of us. And knowing that our marriage is about helping each one of us to become the best person we can become.
Wow.
I love that. I just love that. That's what gets me excited, because that's a turning point for a relationship. You've gone, yes. I just think that that one is a big turning point when you go from being enemies and I don't know if I can stay with you and
your teammates.
You're to like, hey, we're going to get through this together.
Yeah.
And maybe, like you said, there still are other people that we're going to create healthy boundaries and to create a safe environment that, you know, Cherry's not the only person I go to. I don't rely on her to meet all of my needs. At the same time, we also realize that, we're it's almost like, you know, like, like you think of like, you know, superheroes or Marvel, and instead of fighting against each other, it's like, wow, now we can use these gifts and these these things, that these God-given abilities together, knowing that together we're going to take on the evil things in the world, and we're going to take on parenting, and we're going to take on whatever it is that we are pursuing together. And that's an exciting point in a relationship for sure.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as allies, we can accept too that we both don't need to be great at the same things. One of the things that makes us good allies is that you bring different strengths to our relationship, and I bring other ones. And like you were saying, Charity, it helps us to become teammates in that, rather than, you know, always focusing on what the other person isn't doing or can't do or falls short this way or the other way. I mean, God did bring together two very different people, because if we were both the same and both gifted in the same ways, as, you know, some people out there have said, one of us would be redundant. It's good that we can bring different strengths and talents to our relationship and really, you know, affirm those in one another and be grateful we have that, rather than to always find the problems with that.
Okay, what is step number 8?
Step number 8 is to get help for mental health issues you may be struggling with. Brain health, we have come to know in our field, is incredibly important to being well. We're huge proponents of Dr. Daniel Amen's work. Any of you that work with us know that his whole history of creating brain scans for people so that they can see the organ that really drives all of your behaviors. Our brain is such an important organ in terms of our well-being. And historically, we have tried to work on that by just interviewing people about how they're doing, you know, their symptoms. We've looked at their symptoms, and then we've tried to create solutions for their brain health based on that. But Daniel Amen has always said, when your brain isn't working well, you're not working well. And we have found that to be so true in working with our clients, that sometimes there are really unnoticed issues of, say, anxiety, depression, ADD is a very big one, or ADHD, OCD, sometimes those issues are really getting in the way of us being able to respond in situations in the way that would be healthy for us and also those that are living around us. So when we find people getting stuck in their journey and they're getting really frustrated and not making progress, we're always wanting to look at whether there are some mental health issues that need to be addressed so that their brain is working well. And you know what's true? None of us have a perfect brain, to be honest. We don't.
Of course.
We could probably all use some education about this. And whether that's some solutions to eating healthier or exercising or taking supplements or at some times medications to deal with some of these things, it becomes very important to our well-being and being able to show up and be a healthy person in the relationship.
That's so true. The more we've been able to research just neuroscience and our brain,
yes,
it's given us a lot more hope that we can rewire our brain and that our brain doesn't have to stay like this forever. Mm-hmm. And there can be healing in, yes, that, which is, it's so hopeful, yeah, when you can understand that part.
Oh, the neuroplasticity is just like, what? Like, you're like, no, yes, way. And I think, yes, again, it just, that is almost proof of the post-traumatic growth model, mm-hmm, right? That is just, yes, an affirmation that once you go through trauma, your brain doesn't have to stay that way. It can be rewired. Yes.
That's true. And I think it's also true that no one incident like Fidelity creates all of your neurochemistry. Mm. You know, it has been being created all throughout your life. And what is often true is that there have been historical experiences that have created certain things in your brain chemistry, as well as, you know, the DNA that you bring into your life when you're born. So all those things need to be considered so that, again, we're not making this too much of a black or white decision about what's problematic for your brain. You know, the thing is, we want to look and we want to know and have the hope that whatever it looks like today, it can be better and it can change, because that's what we know about brain chemistry now. And, you know, interestingly enough, earlier in the last century, that was not how psychoanalysts described the brain at that time. I mean, there used to be the belief that you were born with a certain brain and that was the brain you had the rest of your life. Mm. I mean, talk about not having a lot of hope.
Yeah,
that was certainly not a hopeful time. So, you know, the advances made in brain health today and what we can do to change our life and live with a healthier brain are absolutely hopeful. And our clients seem to really love it. We introduce brain health to pretty much everybody we're working with, because we want them to take a look at what that might be and what might be getting in the way of their thriving.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah, we've gotten to interview some different people that are in that field of neuroscience, and just, it's been incredible, yeah, to learn. Dr. Amy, if people haven't checked that out, they need to go check that out, because there are some incredible, yeah, resources that he has produced. And just, again, all of this leads to more education, which leads to updating that belief system. So good.
Yep.
Well, give us a little bit on number nine here, which is, you know, finding spiritual work together.
Yeah. Well, I guess our belief is that, you know, if God brought us together as a couple, that maybe our spiritual work is something we would also find to do together. It seems like in our churches, there's an awful lot of men's ministries and women's ministries, not always so much about what we do together. And again, we create passion and purpose in our marriage when we work on things that matter together. Mm. And our spiritual development, I think, is one of those things that definitely matters to us as Christians. Most of us who are in this journey and working with us anyway in a Christian counseling center, what does that look like to do that together? Not me just on my own doing my Bible studies or my connections with women in my church setting, but also what does it mean for us to do that together? So we encourage couples to think about that. It may start with just reading spiritual books together or doing some kinds of devotions together in the morning instead of separate devotions. It may be practicing praying together more or figuring out how God might, you know, use your story together. What might that look like?
Yeah.
That helped us tremendously. Yeah. When we were right after D-Day, we were recommended to do a Devo together, and we picked up a Devo, and honestly, I don't even think it really mattered the topic, yeah, of what we were like learning. I think it was just, yeah, waking up in the morning and centering ourselves together around our Heavenly Father. And it brought a different, yeah, level of intimacy in our relationship.
Mm, yeah, that's perfect. I think it's great. You say it doesn't even matter what we were doing. The fact that you were doing it together, and yes, it was more intimate in that you were sharing, again, thoughts, feelings, and spiritual life. That's a fantastic example.
Yeah, it was pretty powerful. We were praying together, yeah, and we were just like, mm-hmm, and it was almost like we were seeking Jesus together. And it wasn't specifically about what we had gone through. It was just our own personal walk and just to be holding hands and praying together. And I get not every couple can do that, right away, but mm-hmm. we really feel that that was one of the things that really mended our relationship in the beginning and started that healing journey was the fact yeah. that we knew that Jesus loved us both and he did love us together. And we felt that love yeah. in those moments of oneness with him for sure.
Mm, yeah, that's great.
Number 10, you talk about serve each other, not submit. I'd love to hear about that.
I know that's kind of a dangerous word.
Yeah.
Here in the Christian community.
I said it kind of hesitantly. I'm like,
I know you did. Yeah. I will too. Let me just say and preface this on the fact that I believe our desire in our marriage is to feel chosen by one another. Mm. You know, to know that we are the one and only in each other's lives, that we're creating a life out of many experiences that are just something we know to be belongs just to us and not to someone else. I think in light of that, one of the things our belief is that when we really love someone and we do something for them or we provide something for them or we serve them in some way, when we do that because it's something we want to do, not because we feel that we have to do it, there is a difference in terms of, I think, how a person receives that in terms of feeling chosen by you. I think about that not only in our marriages, but even as a parent. You know, I know in a lot of families, there's obligations for children to show up and be a part of, you know, family gatherings or family vacations or whatever. I have women I've worked with in my group, some that were 40 or 50 years old, that were still doing things because of the family obligation. They had to do it, come hell or high water, excuse my language, but they had to be there, you know. And the truth is, what I know about my grown children today is I want them to be with me because they want to be with me.
Yeah.
I don't want them to be with me because they feel like they have to. And that's what I mean about the word submit, is that there's someone else telling them they have to do it this way. Because if they don't, they're somehow doing a disservice to me. But if they really love me, I would rather take them less time and know that when they do show up, it's really because they've chosen to. And in the same way, I think in our marriages, it's like that as well. Mm. When I do things for Mark or I show up, whether it's sexually or just bringing him a cup of coffee or making a nice meal for him or wanting to join him in a game of golf, I do it because I like being with him and I want to serve him. Mm. And that's the way I would like for him to serve me as well, not out of obligation, but simply out of choosing me.
I think that's really important. And the next one, going into sexuality, I just want to hit on this maybe even before you share, is that this is really important for Charity and I, because that choosing one another, we were hesitant to do that, almost like, hey, are you doing this because you just have to? And when the other person made it known, like, no, I actually want to do this. Wow. Yeah. The peace that was created in our household and the comfort and wow, thank you for doing that. And, you know, just things like that. And I think that choosing plays in a lot of areas, and especially this next part about healthy sexuality. Charity and I, our entire marriage, sexuality was pretty broken.
Yeah.
It was never really what it was supposed to be, which we believe that sexuality and healthy sex in a marriage is a wonderful thing. And it's really the epitome of proper intimacy. Really, when you're fully known and it's an exciting thing, you want to share this part of yourself with your spouse. And I think that most people really have no idea, in my opinion, what healthy sexuality really looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would totally agree. Clinton, that we've created a definition that says healthy sexuality is an expression of emotional and spiritual intimacy. So in other words, when you feel connected emotionally and spiritually, then you lead to wanting to be physical and sexual with one another rather than using sexuality as ideally the way you will get connected emotionally and spiritually. And I think that's where really majority, if I guess I could almost say all of our couples, are working on changing the dynamics of what the meaning of their sexuality has been.
Wow.
I think it's interesting as human beings that we are born as kind of heat-seeking missiles, so to speak.
Sure. You know?
I mean, the sexuality part of our relationship typically is so much easier. We want to touch each other and kiss each other and become sexually known. You know, that part drives often early parts of our relationship. I think, unfortunately, we get too used to the fact that maybe this dynamic and this adrenaline that comes from that is what's creating us to feel close and connected. Mm. But really, it's not. You know, I mean, God leads us to want to know. When he uses the word know in Genesis, each other, he's not talking about a sexual knowing. Mm. He's talking about an emotional and spiritual knowing.
Mm. Wow.
And so I think ideally we would kind of move away from our human nature about touch and sexuality to this more spiritual definition, which let's get to know each other emotionally and spiritually so that then we can let our sexuality be an expression of that. Okay.
Man,
so
I love
that's
that.
What we're working on.
That's so countercultural. It's it goes against every movie Hollywood's ever produced.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, and I just think that is so important for people to understand that because, and I think, like you said, we've almost manipulated it, right? As a culture, as a society, even, I mean, probably from the beginning of time, we have used sex, and we know there are things that go on in the brain. There is bonding that happens during sex. And so I just think it is the epitome of something that is supposed to be used to bond a person after they're known. We are using it prematurely to bond to a person thinking that we're now going to be more connected because we had sex or because we've physically engaged in a relationship. And and there's no question that kissing and hand-holding and touch and, of course, sex, those things do bond us to a person. But we were never meant to do those things so that we would not have to bond emotionally and intimately with being known. And that's what I hear you saying.
Yep, absolutely. Well said.
Or even being obligated to. I mean, I remember from my perspective, my view of sex was so distorted that I was doing it more so out of like a task, you know.
Obligation.
Yeah, like, well, I've got to serve my husband and I'd rather him, you know, do this than look at porn. So, which is, a misconception is, let's just, have sex so that he doesn't look at porn.
A couple of distorted core beliefs there, weren't there, Charity?
Yes,
that I'm
multiple.
Sure you worked on in your own recovery. Is that really a truth? Is really serving my husband this way, is it helping him to feel more loved and chosen or not? lots of distorted core beliefs we're starting to change in our journey so that we can live in truth as an adult today. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I know time is of the essence for you guys, but the other three that I'm going to plug in right here are three that, you didn't have on your list because there are other three that Mark and I added to our list.
Please.
One of those was to forgive one another. Mm. Obviously, forgiveness is going to be a huge piece in moving forward. And I say one another because what is true is we have other things to forgive in our relationship other than just infidelity. And that is a big one, and I don't want to minimize that. But the truth is we've been disappointed with each other. We have hurt each other in various ways. And I think part of us moving forward is each of us owning ways that we have done that and working on that forgiveness process so that we can leave our scorekeeping in the past, I guess, is one of the things I talk about.
Yeah.
And that we enter our future, again, as allies and not as one who is more on the pedestal than the other, one more self-righteous than the other. We want to enter this as both broken human beings who are walking this path together and holding hands. Another one that we added was to learn how to have fun together. This sounds
kind
of paradox.
No, we love
Work on having fun.
Yes. Right. Work on having fun.
It does seem like that for a lot of couples, actually. And when we look at it, many of us say, well, we used to have fun, or when we first met, we had all kinds of fun.
Yep.
But somehow life and the seriousness of it and, bringing children into the world, if those of us have done that, there are a lot of things that distract us from just really enjoying each other. And we know that part of our well-being is finding what that is. And it may be for the first time. It may be returning to some things that we used to do that somehow we let go of. But being playful together is going to be a very important part of well-being.
Yeah, we cannot agree more. That's definitely something that we've been dabbling in the past couple of years. And because, as you know, D-Day is, you know, very shocking, and there's a lot of emotions that come with it. And when you're in that process of healing and working your programs and going into therapy, you're learning so much. And so it can become very overwhelming in your life, and it feels all consuming. Like that's all you do. It's all you think about, and it's all amazing. I'm not discrediting that that's what needs to happen in order, you know, to gain healing and rebuilding your marriage. But another aspect of that is talking not about the issue. It is there's so much emotion already carried to it. And so we had to learn like, okay, what can we do that doesn't revolve around all of this?
Yeah.
You know, because it's become our life. It's become our lifestyle. And so we had to learn how to implement having fun together, whether that was in the very beginning, it was a card game, you know, just around the dining room table after the kids were asleep. Yes. And then it has progressed since then. But I mean, we just picked up tennis last week on our date because we're just like, you know, we're just trying to find different avenues right now just to be kids and laugh together and enjoy something together and have fun together and play like you're talking about.
Yeah. Very, very important. So another point before we're at number 14 now is find purpose in the pain.
Mm.
Again, this is the post-traumatic growth. And as a couple, you know, how can we find purpose in our pain, in the story that we've shared that ended up being very traumatic to us? And I think the couples who end up being able to talk about that and even put things in their life, clearly for Mark and me, a lot of that was moving forward with counseling together. And that led us to use our pain in a very positive way. We're not saying that everybody needs to do that to find purpose, but there are many other ways that we can do that to know that we have grown through some really hard times. And we've done that together, you know, eventually, which has been really great for our coupleship.
Yeah.
And lastly, this is really a big point, is can we surrender the idea that we could find a perfect spouse? You know, again, kind of countercultural in that I think we often learn that there is a perfect person for us out there. You know, there's the prince or princess that's just waiting for us to be found. And the truth is we're all human beings and we're all broken. And there are none of us that are going to live life perfectly. And there's no relationship that's going to be perfect either. And can we learn to talk about the things that we want to work on changing and the ways we might be hurting each other so that we can eliminate as much of that as possible and accept that both of us are flawed and both of us are broken. And in that, we can still see the beauty of each one of us and why God brought us together as a couple. So I think when we can accept that broken place in our spouse, it can let us let go of our critical nature and always wanting to change something about someone else, and just to focus on the beauty of that person. You know, I love the Philippians 4:8 verse about, you know, whatever is true and lovely and beautiful and so forth. Focus on those things, because I think in time we can choose what we're going to focus on. And if we focus on all those things that disappoint us, or they're different about this person, or we wish they would change, we can miss the opportunity of really loving life with this person. So surrender is the last thing we talk about.
I love it. That's so important. So important to do, realizing that, again, you know, the person we're married to is not only, and again, if we believe that God's working in our relationship, we understand that God has given us this person. And we've committed, and that's the whole thing about those vows, that for better or for worse, that I absolutely know I'm flawed. I have so many things I'm always trying to work on, and Charity is so gracious to not necessarily overlook them, right, but to love me through them.
Well, those are the 15. I'm sure there are many more, but those are the ones we landed on over the years. And I think it's a pretty good list.
I think that is an amazing list. Like, incredible. I hope that every listener who's listening to this jotted down those 15 steps, because I believe that they will see transformational growth like we were talking about in the beginning of this episode. And that's what we want. That's what we hope. And I'm so grateful that you and Mark sat in, you know, sat down and wrote down this list and what works, what doesn't work. And because I know that so many people are going to get hope, not only from this list, but if they apply it, they're going to see a lot of growth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the things we've enjoyed is when we work with couples and they feel stuck, you know, maybe after a couple, 3 years or whatever in their work together, we pull out the list again and we say, let's review this again. Are there any of these that you are missing along the way? And most times they can pinpoint a couple of things on there that they've really not paid much attention to. And it gives them some real practical direction for what to spend some time on to maybe get unstuck.
Yep.
I love that. And Debbie, if there are people that want to learn more about this, can you please tell us about where they could go to learn more about these topics and things that pertain to what we talked about today?
Well, I wish I could say they're all in a book all together, and the truth is they're not. I would say that at this point, they're all throughout our resources, our various books, Seven Desires. We've written a book that has a lot of practical exercises in it called The Toolkit for Growth for couples and individuals. And the truth is, in the book I'm writing, many of these things will be in it as well. So we created this list, frankly, for our couples workshop that we lead at our center. So we talk about it there. So I guess all that to say, it's not neatly packaged up somewhere. I wish I could say that today.
Well, I love that, though. Those are some great resources. And those books have changed thousands of lives.
Yeah.
As we have gone through them, they have been so powerful for us. And I hope more people go to your guys' website and they look at more of what you're doing. They learn about those workshops because maybe those workshops are right for them as well.
Yep.
And and we hope that people turn to those and are willing to submit to the healing process that you guys have created, because it is one that is proven to change lives.
And Debbie, again, your workshops right now, they are all virtually, correct?
But our individual workshops are for both men and women. We actually have a women's workshop coming up here in a couple, well, next week actually, and men's we do every month. And they are all virtual, and it's, you know, God has been amazingly blessed our process to be able to create some very powerful workshops that way. Our couples workshop is still on hold because we would like to do that in person. So we did cancel the one we had scheduled for November and hope that in the spring we will be able to offer that again.
And just for our listeners, again, it is Faithful and True Ministries that you can find all of this information.
Yeah, and actually our website is just faithfulandtrue.com.
There you go.
Faithfulandtrue.com. Awesome. Great resource.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that.
Debbie, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for all that you shared. We are so grateful. Chair and I took so many notes, and we know that this is going to be a very powerful podcast episode.
Well, thank you guys for having me again. You're just dear, dear people, and I'm so amazed by your journey. I love it when young people get this going early on in life, because you can be such game changers to your kids' lives and changing those generational patterns. So, you know, good for you guys. I'm so proud of you. And thanks again for having me.
Thank you, Debbie.
I'm yours until the end of time.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. Follow us on Instagram and sign up for the upcoming course. You can also connect with us on the Ask Us Anything page at RestoredToMore.com. Also, quick note, all the work at Restored to More Inc., including this podcast, is made possible by our donors and financial partners. We wouldn't be here without those who have generously given to the cause of restoration. If you ever feel led to give, you can do so on the donate page on our website,